Having the privilege in my life of sitting with family members at the bedside of a dying loved one, I have witnessed and I have participated in many conversations about death. Some are beautiful and peaceful as you watch the dying bestow blessings and affirmations on the ones they are leaving behind. Family members will often sit and hold the hands of the dying while they cry or silently pray, and they take in the moment and the blessing that is being offered for them. They may not understand all that is happening at the time, but they know that it is a time like none other in their lives, and so they are quiet. They are open to what is happening, and they soak in all that their dying loved one is offering to them. Perhaps things will make sense a little later, perhaps not, but they are in the moment. Then there are those other families who approach death and dying in a dramatically different way. A dying loved one will try to explain things to their family or to let them know the gravity of the moment, while the family tries to quiet the dying person as if not saying the words will keep death from occurring. They may try to pass it off as saving energy or strength for recovery, but it is a disguise of fear and misunderstanding. It's a disguise of not wanting to hear, not wanting to accept. You see, these families mean well. They want more time. They want more memories. They want restored life for their dying loved one. Unfortunately, though, they are so focused on what they want that they miss the pivotal moments happening before their very eyes. And sadly, too often, they miss incredible opportunities to be present and to help usher their loved one from this life into the next. You see, those are holy moments in the lives of you and your family, and holy moments between a pastor and that person and those families. We all have them. We all are able to be a part. Some of us choose to be, and some choose to go the other way. You see, today the disciples are met with an end-of-days conversation about Jesus in our text. It is an intimate time between Jesus and His closest friends, and He takes that opportunity to share something deeply personal with them. He tells them, "I will be betrayed, I will die, but I will rise again." You see, this is one of those moments when the disciples should be hanging on Jesus' every word, struggling not to miss anything that He is saying. This is one of those life-changing moments. But guess what? The disciples do not get it. They miss the moment. They do not understand. They are afraid. So they do not attempt to truly be present with Jesus in this revealing and crucial conversation that He is having with them. The disciples, in a sense, act like children, and in their fear, they turn to bickering and they lose focus on the significance of the time that is at hand. In a matter of just moments, they go from hearing Jesus reveal His plans of His death and resurrection to arguing about who is the greatest among them. Much more childish could grown men act to say, "Who is the best?" But yet, to their credit, they know that they have behaved badly. When Jesus questions them about their conversation, you can almost picture them sheepishly avoiding eye contact. Have you ever caught a child doing something? What do? They put their head down. They don't look at you. They shrug their shoulders. They might kick the dirt. They might mumble. My mama called me Hillbilly Bear most of my life growing up. And I never understood that because I didn't know who Hillbilly Bear was. Well, Hillbilly Bear, I understand, was a cartoon character that muttered and grumbled and growled and put his head down. And that's, Mama said I muttered because when I'd get angry, and I would do it, I would just walk around and talk to myself. So I did it, and I think I turned out okay, but I'm not telling you that's a point that you should hang on. I'm not telling you that's a real admirable point and quality there that I have of my life. But I did do those things. I didn't like to be caught. I didn't like to, but we all get caught. And the disciples were no different. They got caught. They know they've been caught by their dear friend Jesus, not only doing something that he would not approve of, but disrespectfully moving from a conversation of significance as his upcoming death to an argument about their greatness and who outranks whom. Who is the best? Who's better? They are embarrassed and they're ashamed, so they stand in silence with nothing to say. Have you ever been to the point where you knew you couldn't say anything? Because you knew you were wrong. You knew you hadn't listened. But you see, Jesus takes advantage of this teachable moment, and he calls his disciples to him once again, and he says, ironically, he considers their childish behavior, I think, and he brings a child into their circle of the conversation. It is a most calm manner that he does this. Jesus tells them how truly wrong they are, not just for engaging in the greatness conversation, but also for how they went about measuring each other's greatness. The great one, the first one, in Jesus' words, is not the one who will be measured by their merit or their valor, but rather by service to all, by service to everyone. It's like Miss Vicki said this morning in her children's time, by paying it forward, by doing something for someone else, by giving, by doing, by not having to be told or asked to do it, just doing it. By serving all, not just one, but serving everybody. Not just the ones that you like better than the others, all of them. Not just the one who can carry on great conversations with you, but all of them. We all have to know, we all have to do. You see, it is a measure of for our all cultures that undoubtedly got the disciples' immediate attention. He said to them that day, he said, it's service to everyone. Not what you've done, not how good you think you are, not all the accomplishments that you have. And so the disciples were kind of like, ah. Can't you again almost picture them moving from a stature of slumped shoulders, probably still avoiding eye contact and probably still drawing lines in the dirt, and looking up in surprise and all of a sudden leaning forward to make sure that they did hear Jesus right. This just cannot be so. Greatness awarded by service? How in the world? Then to really drive that message home, Jesus references the child in their midst and he says, here stands an innocent child, a little girl or a little boy, we don't know, representing the ways that the disciples have behaved and looking to them as adults, role models, Jesus' closest companions. Jesus embraces that child to show how serious he is about caring for the little ones, and he explains his message to the disciples in a way that they cannot ignore, in a way that they have to hear. Verse 36 says, if you welcome a child in my name, you welcome me, and you also the one who sent me. You see, it doesn't get much simpler than that or clearer. Greatness is not about wonderful deeds or adhering to the letter of the law. Greatness in the eyes of Jesus is about welcoming the small, is about welcoming the often ignored, about welcoming those that seem in our world to be insignificant. Greatness is about taking notice of those who are often slighted or misunderstood, those who are on the fringes of our world. How sad and ironic, then, is the beginning of this text. Jesus foretold his death, and because of the disciples' confusion and fear, his words were ignored and unacknowledged. Have you ever felt like you were talking to people who weren't paying any attention to you? Think about it. Have you ever been in a conversation with someone who you wanted them to listen to you and they're over there looking out the window, looking at their watch, and wonder what's going on. Wonder what's going to happen when we get through here. Think about it. Have you ever been in a place where you felt like you were ignored? You see, Jesus felt just like that in his life because he was ignored so many times. He said, you know, how many times have I got to tell you guys this story? How many times have I got to tell you? Because guess what? You are going to be the ones that are left here. You're going to be the ones that are the disciples. And you're going to go out and you're going to tell others. And they're going to hear that story, and those are going to be disciples, and they're going to tell others. You see, for those that day who truly grasped the transpiring events and understood where true greatness lies, it must have been humiliating and yet also a revealing moment of hope and clarity. Some of them got it, some of them didn't. Thank God for those who catch it. Thank God for those who catch on, who understand, who believe, who go out, who tell the story once again. It's something we've been hearing year after year after year, and every now and then somebody kind of tries to reinvent the wheel. And for the past few years, our conference has said, you know, we are what? We are disciples making disciples making disciples for the generations to come. When you disciple one, you disciple so many more. But when you can get one person to truly understand it and to want to know more and to want to learn more, to want to go a little bit deeper, to want to understand, then you've got it. You've caught on. It says, you and I have the benefit of learning from the disciples' childish behavior through their stories. Because we have His Word. We've got their stories all throughout this book. And see, we know the end of the story. They were a part of it. You know, we would have been no different than them because we are no different than them today. Because we sit here on Sunday morning or during the week sometimes, and part of us pay attention and part of us don't. Part of us hear, part of us don't hear one word. Part of us are asleep, part of us are thinking about something else, part of us are somewhere else, even though we're sitting here physically. So whatever the reason, we're here for so many different things, but we benefit from the disciples' stories and their mistakes because they remind us of us. We are able to learn from their mistakes and hopefully strive for true greatness one day, the kind Jesus challenges all of us to live, as those who embrace servanthood, as those who notice the children, as those who notice the small, the misunderstood among us. The disciples missed out on some key moments in their lives, some key moments of intimacy, blessing, sharing, and learning by letting fear and selfishness get in their way. You see, sometimes we're just like that. We're afraid to know more. We are afraid to know more. And we're selfish because we want things our way. We want everything because we've got our world out there planned, and this little hour or two on Sunday morning is just chopped out long enough to squeeze it in and to get out of here by 12 or a little bit after so that everything else will fall in place. And God help if we make a mistake. God help if we stay a few minutes longer. But see, that's what it's all about. We're too selfish, and we fear knowing more. You see, if we read this book and we learn more about it, guess what? It makes us want to learn more and know more and go deeper. So we fear what we don't know. And so we just let it go. We fear the things around us. And we're also selfish because we don't get our way all the time. May we learn today from their mistakes. And may we be open to what life-changing conversations may come our way so that we might truly be present in all of life and most specifically in those moments that change our lives. For those moments that might change our lives because, you know, we miss out on so much when we choose to be a part. When we choose, and we make that choice every day, we choose not to go somewhere. We choose not to make a visit. We choose not to make a call. We choose not to send a note. We choose not to get involved. Just as much as we choose to. So may we take some sacrifices this week. May we go above and beyond. May we serve Him with gladness. May we find that servanthood that we need. Let us pray. Lord, I thank you this day for your word, and I ask, Lord, your blessings to be upon it. And I ask, Lord, that you just allow these words that are your words about your disciples and about their experiences and about the things that we have the opportunity on a daily basis to do and to be like them, that we choose, Lord, that which is good and that which is pleasing in your sight, and not that which might we think is good for us. So, Lord, be with us now. Bless us as we continue in our time this morning. Allow our hearts to be in tune with you. Allow our spirits to follow you. And allow us to walk with you in the weeks to come. Be with us now. For it's in your name I pray. Amen. Our hymn of decision is hymn number 472, Near to the Heart of God. And know that the altar is always open for you to come. Would you stand as we sing hymn number 472?